Now, one of Britain's top comedians, Jason Manford, is in Belfast this week. He's starring in a hit show at the Opera House, The Producers. It's the latest big role for the star in a career that's already taken off on stage and on screen after starting life as a stand-up comic. Well, let's hear a clip of him in action in Live at the Apollo.
Football, but I'm getting to this stage where I'm starting to dislike footballers. I don't know if anyone else has this problem, right? But these like multi-millionaires running around the pitch, you know, every 5 minutes. I've hurt myself. There was a bloke a few weeks back, he missed 3 Premiership games with a dead leg, right? Now, that's not an injury, is it, a dead leg, right? When I was a kid, I had 3 dead legs in one day once, right? And that was for free. I still have to do PE and walk home. That's not an injury, mate.
That was Jason's take on football players. I'm pleased to say Jason's with us here this morning. Jason, welcome to the Nolan Show, even
Thank
though Stephen's
much.
Not here. that reminds me, actually, that take on the footballers. Mm. I was reading you got to do the big Footballers Award Bash this year, because you're a big City fan, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
Manchester City fan, yeah. and you did the PFA Awards Bash.
I did the PFA Awards, the Professional Footballer Awards. It's a notoriously tough gig. It's a Sunday night in some posh hotel in London, and it's... So many, every comic you speak to, they go, I said, oh, I'm doing the PFA Awards. And I've done it before, like 5 or 6 years ago. They said, oh, never do it again. Because it's a really tough room, because you've got these sort of like young urban footballers, and then you've got these like multimillionaires, then you've got foreign players, then you've got the oldest people you've ever seen in your life.
The suits.
Yeah, the people who are on the PFA. And then you've got to try and find a joke that's going to make all those people laugh. So
do you go down a footballing route? Do you try to theme it towards sort of footballing gags, or do you steer away from that? What do you do?
No, I do a couple of topical stuff.
A few of them out, do you?
I hint at a couple, yeah. So anyone who's had a bit of... If there's been any fun in the paper or anything, nothing too serious, but a bit of fun, then, yeah, we'll take the mickey out of them. And then by that point, they've been so sort of just blasted with football for, you know, all night that actually they sort of like...
Something else,
yeah. So, and it was the first time they had the women's football in as well this year as well. So there was some fun to be had.
Another
well.
Fine line to steer, so, then, yes.
Yeah, again, it's sort of... Well, I'm a big fan of women's football because I've got daughters who I'm... You know, trying to push into so the more popular women's football gets, I'm like, oh, brilliant! This is definitely something to do.
You're probably picking on all the Man United players, leaving the City ones alone, were you?
Well, there's an element of that, yeah. There's an element of that.
So the Producers, I mean, first of all, I went to see the Producers many years ago in Manchester. Peter Kay was in
that production as well. Yeah.
So for those that don't know the storyline, in 30 seconds, what's it all about?
It's about it's about a producer and an accountant who hit upon a theory that they can make more money out of a flop than they can with a hit by raising $2 million worth of backing, and then if it flops in one night, they don't have to pay anybody back, and then they can just run away with the $2 million. And that was the idea. So they set about trying to find the worst play ever written. They find a crazed Nazi who's trying to clear the Führer's name. For Hitler. They find the worst director, Roger Debris, who camps it up to an unbelievable level, and then that's the idea, and it's it goes wrong, as you can imagine.
So. And Belfast, I mean, you opened on Monday night.
Opened Monday.
You're here for the week. So, yeah. I mean, when have you been? You've been to Belfast before, haven't you?
Oh yeah, many times. Yeah. I played the Waterfront on my last tour, and the Odyssey on the tour before. So
Belfast audiences, how are they?
Interactive. That's what I always say. I say when you come to Belfast, it's like being in a double act. I did the Falls Road as well last year as well. I did a comedy gig there in a big tent, which I obviously was slightly terrifying when I was like, what is this going to be like? And actually it was probably one of the best gigs I've ever had. It was delightful.
So even interactive when you're in the Opera House.
Oh yeah, Monday night. We've done 60 shows and had very, you know, very sort of English audiences who were like, oh yes, we're at theatre and we're dressed up, and Belfast we got here, there's a point where Franz, Phil Jupiter's character, points a gun at the MD, who's sort of a little bit part of the show, and a guy shouted out, "Shoot him now!" And I'm like, we're in a play. Like, it was bizarre. And then somebody else joined in at some point when they were trying to will a character on. He was like, oh, should I do this? They're like, yeah. It was great. And, you know, for when you've been in a show this long, anything like that sort of makes you go, oh, great, it's something a bit fresh. But I love gigging up. I love gigging up here. I've always had love, even from back from doing the Empire with Colin Murphy and the guys there. I just love it. It's great fun.
When did it sort of hit you? Let's go back to like the stand-up stuff. When did it kind of hit you that people find me funny and I could make a living out of this?
Well, I guess, I was always a bit daft at school and I was always having fun. I always had fun there. And the same with, you know, when I had little jobs and stuff when I was sort of 16, 17. I always had daft stories and I enjoyed making people laugh. You know, there was an element of that as well. So I guess once I started doing some stand-up and it started to go all right, and you get that buzz and that feeling of laughter.
Did you need courage to do it in the first place? Because these stories people probably read, you know, you, this image of you collecting beer glasses and, from rags to riches and all that kind of stuff. But when did you first kind of perform as a youngster? Were you a performer?
I was always in stuff at school, you know. I was always in the plays, and I'd compare, you know, events and stuff if the head teacher asked me to. Like, I was sort of the go-to.
One of the cheeky one-liners.
I was the go-to pupil, you know, and for that sort of stuff. And then I started stand up when I was 17, so I started relatively early. It's a weird one. I don't know now. Like, if I'd never done it and I'd been, you know, a bit funny at work or whatever job I'd have had, I don't know if I'd do it now. I don't know if I'd have the, you know, that sort of get up and go to do it. But at 17, I guess you just think, I'll have a go. Yeah, what's that going
to
happen?
You need a lot of confidence, though, to do it, because, you know, you die.
Oh, yeah.
You can die a death. Well, did it happen?
Yeah, I mean,
were there nights when you thought to yourself, actually, maybe this isn't a good idea?
Absolutely. I mean, first, you know, I mean, even now you get the odd, you know, sweaty moment where you're like, oh, no. at the beginning, you die more than you don't. And that's the worst feeling in the world. I mean, even when you describe a situation where you're on stage and everyone's staring at you, not laughing, and you can hear the odd... or the toilet door creaking open or something. It's the worst feeling in the world. But with stand-up, I guess the highs are so high because the lows are so low. When it's going well, I mean, there's nothing like it.
How much do you labour over material? Because there's the interesting... The Channel 4 programme before Peter Kay went on the tour, the big tour, the last one. And, you know, there were like all these nights that he had in front of audiences of 100 and 200.
Yeah, yeah.
And he, you know, about 20 of these nights where he goes through all this material to work out what's actually good and what isn't.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
People don't see that. They see you or whoever it is for an hour and a half or 2 hours on stage and they think, isn't he brilliant? He probably just came up with all that in a couple of hours and he scribbled it all down. You mean you labour over that material?
Yeah, I mean, it's meticulous and it's a lot of practice. I think on my last tour, I did 280 dates on my last tour. And the first 60 were warm-up dates in front of sort of 100, 200 people. And the first 20 of those, you're actually reading jokes off a bit of paper. Like, I've got the paper in front of me and I'm ticking them off. Like, they're getting a laugh, tick, no laugh, cross. You know, and it's that.
So you're coming off on a rig of your material, you're just almost putting the line through and saying,
that didn't work. Yeah, I mean, it's weird. Like, it doesn't matter who you are, how top of the craft you are, whether you're... you know, Peter Kay, or whether you're a new person starting, you don't know from the page whether it's funny or not. You think it's funny, but you think it's all funny. And then it's only when you try it in front of an audience, they let you know what...
It's like the equivalent of 60 pre-season friendlies. I mean,
how
do you motivate yourself for another warm-up?
The warm-ups are the most exciting, actually.
Because they're more intimate.
Yeah, and they're more intimate, and also... They're the ones where you just go, well, anything could happen here, you know. And also the audiences really enjoy them because they get to see... what you end up having is people who come to your warm-up and then come and see the proper show in sort of 8 months' time so they can
see how different it is.
How different, yeah. And
there's
that's
a risk as well, isn't there, that maybe something just didn't work on the night but it might have worked some other time.
Yeah,
I'll always give
stuff, you know, four or five... you know, goes before I
because
go.
You think it's really funny.
Yeah, but I'm sure this is funny. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, at the same time, those gigs, although they are, it is hard when a joke doesn't go well, The audience are very supportive because and they're aware, you know, you build it as a warm up gig or a new material night, so they've come along expecting and you know, at the top of the show you're like, look, not all this is funny, so yes. Let's just see what happens. And actually what ends up happening is you'll do a joke that doesn't get a laugh and you'll acknowledge it, and then that gets the biggest laugh of the night, you know. So there's ways of playing it, you know,
and making that funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you enjoy a good heckle? I mean, are you almost disappointed if you go off some night? Or is there a sort of a, when someone heckles you, if you have the right one-liner to come back with, does that nearly make you feel as if, class, buried him, buried
well,
her?
To be honest, generally, I get quite positive heckles. Like, I get people joining in and forgetting themselves, I guess, forgetting where the protocol and the fact that it's a bit of a faux pas, but... generally, I don't... I mean, when you're an antagonistic comic, you know, then you can end up getting harsh heckles back and dealing with them. And, you know, you watch Jimmy Carr or Frankie Boyle and they've got some great liners and they're destroying people, bam, bam, bam. Whereas for me, I get either people just joining in, people who, before 8 o'clock, if you said, would you ever heckle a comedian? They'd say, never, I'd never even think about it. And an hour later, they're joining in and shouting yes. things. And... they're often just agreeing with stuff you've said and or offering their opinion, you know. It's very rarely negative, like it's very rarely horrible because they've already paid to come and see you, you know, and also the audience are on your side. And heckle put-downs are very much a confidence trick. You know, you can be quick. As long as you're quick, you can generally get a laugh out of destroying someone because you've got the microphone, you can have selective hearing, you can do what you need to do to make sure you win that battle. But generally the odds are weighted in your favour.
The telly thing, I mean, how different did you find that, or were you just like serenely breezing along? You've got this confidence, you know you're funny, you know people find you funny, and someone offers you an opportunity to go on the telly. Was it something that intimidated you, or did you think...
I guess it's what...
Did it surprise you?
No, I mean, what's interesting is that, you know, in stand-up, what you've got to remember is not everyone thinks you're funny, and that's hard to get over when you're a comic trying to make everybody laugh. And so... In a club, what the main difference about telly is, when you're in a comedy club or when you're on tour or doing a little theatre, generally most people in the room find you funny because they already like you. They've invested in coming to see you. So you're kind of preaching to the choir. Whereas telly, of course, you've opened yourself up to people who are like, well, yeah. I kind of like this programme, but I don't fancy him being
plus on
it.
You're not getting the instant feedback from Agnes who's sitting in her living room.
Yeah,
you don't know whether she's thought you're funny or not.
Yeah, exactly. So... yeah, it's a different medium and it's hard, and you've got to then trust yourself a little bit more. But again, I'll do warm up. So,
but the old panel shows are kind of made for guys like you, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean they're great fun because you know, and I did 8 out of 10 Cats for 5 years, and it's just great fun. You know, it's you work hard and you write your material all week, and if anything, what happens is you write your material, which then gives you the confidence to mess around and ad-lib and make things up, but because you know you've always got that to fall back on. Mm. And yeah, they are fun. They are fun to do the panel shows. Hard. They can be hard, and they're a long edit. You know, they probably record for 2.5 hours and then they cut it down to half an hour. So what you're seeing on the telly is the best half hour. There was a lot of stuff where we were like...
that's really bad.
All right, then.
and there was the stuff in the papers around the time, was it when the Beeb said, you know, about they wanted, you know, a female on the panels and all that kind of stuff. And you were making the point, actually, that nearly increases the pressure on her because people might be looking at this by making that information public, kind of saying, well, she's only there because they wanted a woman on the panel, and she's not there being funny in her own right.
Yeah, it's a tough one for the BBC because they you know, they're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't. So I sort of felt for them in that respect. But I think there's more than enough funny female comics out there to stick one on every panel show. But I guess that was the worry, was that if you force that, positive discrimination is still discrimination. So it's how you disguise that, you know, and obviously if you've just blatantly said, well, we're going to stick one on every show, even for the female comic, they must think, well, am I here on merit or am I here because there's a quota? Mm. But generally, I mean, I find it fascinating. I've got a range of comedy clubs in around the UK.
What's going to come to that? Yeah, I mean, is that something that you deliberately thought, actually, I would like to give other young comics a real
Yeah,
opportunity
I think so.
To be found and discovered.
New comics, and then there's comics who've been doing it longer than me, who, you know, just wanted good comedy clubs, a good standard of comedy clubs. And there were certain companies who were a bit unscrupulous and not...
Let's not name them.
I won't name them, of course, but there was the odd company that I thought, you know what, they're not treating comedians how comedians should be treated. They're not treating audiences how they should be treated. They're trying to drain as much money out of an industry that where there's not a lot of money at that level, you know.
And you kind of thought, I'd set up a set of comedy clubs that will treat comedians the way I would have wanted to be treated.
Exactly, yeah, and put them in nice rooms and not charge the earth and not try and milk every, you know, and not try and get the audience hammered because that's where you make the most amount of money, you know. Try and go, look, this is just a fun night out. And so, yeah, it's a company. I set up a company with my brother that, we don't make any money. We broke even for the first time this month and we had a celebration. We're like, we broke even. So it's kind of the best, in a way, it's like the best reason to start a company because I've got a job that does really well. So I didn't set it up thinking, I can make a lot of money out of this. It's totally set up because it can kind of look after itself and enough people come and we pay enough money to the acts. They're happy, audiences are happy, venues are happy, and it kind of works, you know, touch wood, it works at the moment. So, I guess by putting, it's almost like I'm putting a blue tick next to the comedians we book to say, look, I promise you, you know, I get it. You've worked hard all week for your money in your job. You're not going to just gamble with, you know, £12 and which is a, you know, an hour's work or a couple of hours work, and come and see a random comic who you've never heard of. But I'm telling you that I promise you these four comics are brilliant and you'll definitely enjoy three out of four. You know, just out of the odds. You know, and it's been really great so far. And we've seen some comics who now, because then I get phone calls from, you know, the exec at 8 out of 10 Cats or Live at the Apollo who says, what new comics are knocking about? You know, you've seen plenty. And I'm able to give them a list of comedians who wouldn't normally then get on the telly, you know. So it's...
Does your brother, has he followed you on the stage? Or
Yeah, Colin does a little bit. He compares a lot of the gigs as well. So, he's good. He's a lot ruder than me, but he's like the dark side of me.
What about the touring? I mean, you've mentioned all the shows that you did in the last stand-up tour. You're touring now with the producers. Is that something you ever found hard to deal with? Because you're here with your little one and your girlfriend here with you. I mean, does that help or?
Yeah, it helps. It's a double-edged sword. Like, it's brilliant. I love it. It's great to have something to do all day. But yeah, when you finish it late and then you're up at 7 o'clock, like, with your eyes all trying to be open, that can be hard. And then I have my other children at weekend as well, or they come with us. Or for the whole half term, we had a whole week in Brighton, then a whole week in Southend. Just it was the hardest 2 weeks of the tour. But then, you know, it swings and roundabouts. Really, I think as a parent, you get to a point where you just go, all right, I'm tired now. Like, this is how I am. I'm a tired person because I've got young children, you know. And once you're over that bit, you can kind of just get on with life. You're not chasing an hour's sleep every so often. You can just get on with it. So I guess I don't mind it that much. Touring is just part of the job, you know, and it's just all...
Pays the bills.
Yeah, and I couldn't do a 9-to-5 in the same office every day now. You know, that to me is... When I talk to other people, I'm like, how do you do that? And they're looking at me like, how do you do that? So I guess it's what you're used to, isn't it? And what you can... And I've been doing it for 17 years, so...
I guess, in the position you are, there are things that are very difficult. One would be trying to get a balance because it's not as if I know what you're saying about 9-to-5, but you can't control when work's going to come your way.
Not at all, no.
And the other thing, of course, is the fact you live your life in such a public way.
Yeah, yeah. I guess what you try and do is like, for example, for me, I know I'm working, I'm looking at the diary, and I know I'm busy until the third week of July, and then I'm off till the last week of September. So I've got, you know...
So say somebody phones you in between that time. I mean, that's your idea of trying to get a balance. Right, well, that's family
weeks,
time.
Yeah.
Say somebody phones you up with something that's a really good offer. Are you someone that finds it really difficult to say no to those?
It has been hard in the past. Now, I think, because of the tour that I do, when I tour myself, that could just be my full-time job now. Like, I could just do that and not telly on the head and all the other things. And so now I'm able to then pick and choose and say, all right, well, I'll do that and that, but I won't do that. And that's the bonus of, I guess, if I'm doing it for so long. you know, you've got to... I now tell my agent, I say, look, don't even ring me. Don't even... If something comes up...
The temptation's not there.
Don't even ring me, and then I don't know about it, you know. But I promise my children that daddy's working really hard till July, but once the summer holidays hits, we're off. And then my daughter starts school in the September, so I need to take 3 weeks off there just to be around for her to bed in. And, you know, so... it can be hard to balance it. And now the children are getting a little bit older. Early on, it was fine because we all just went on tour and they came with me and we were sort of nomadic. And now we've got school and things that they need to be around for, then, yeah, it is hard. But then when I look at the rest of the cast and the producers, you know, there's people in the ensemble who've got the same problems as me, but and they're dealing with it. So I guess it's just relative, I suppose.
There was a difficult time for you when you had to pull the plug on the One Show around a lot of very public tabloid headlines.
Yeah, yeah.
When you look back at that, and you've spoken about it before, and how big a mistake you now know that was, the consequences of it, though, I think you've said at times that you've looked at it and thought that maybe the One Show wouldn't have actually been the right vehicle for you, as wrong as what caused it and how it came about and what you did.
I guess like any job, you take it on merit at the time, and I thought, oh, this will be fun, this will be interesting. And it was fun and interesting, and I love working with Alex and the team there. But as a comic, you are restricted in that role. I remember doing something a few weeks after I'd started the job, and somebody said to me, well, you shouldn't say that. As a BBC presenter, and I thought, hang on a minute, what have I done here? So, you know, and I guess the thing with stand-up comedy and a British audience is... you know, if you hold your hands up and say, oh, I made a mistake there, I didn't mean to do that, and apologise to the people who it's affected, you can kind of get over it and move on, and that's what I've done, really. And from working hard, I think, and getting back on stage, dealing with a few heckles, and then cracking on, you know, funny's funny. So it's been, it's up and down, and fame, I guess, is a byproduct of being successful in my particular job, you know. But I wouldn't swap any of it. You know, it's been fascinating and interesting. And
even when you see yourself on the front page of a tabloid, you think to yourself, actually, that goes with the territory. It's not something you would say.
I didn't enjoy it.
No,
but at
no.
the same time, like I think about.
But you wouldn't sacrifice all the good bits to.
No,
to not
because
be
I look
there,
at my children.
Because it was almost self-inflicted.
Well, I guess so, and also I look at my children and go, well, they have a better start in life than I had. When I think about our sort of, I mean, it wasn't Angela's Ashes, but, you know, we didn't have anything. So I guess in comparison, I think, well, they've got a great start in life now, and I'm able to give them that. And yes, there's bad things that happen every so often, but yeah, I guess, you know, when they're self-inflicted, you just got to hold your hands up and go, well, I made a mistake, I'm human, and let's crack on.
You're big actor now on TV drama. And
yeah,
all.
They keep giving me stuff.
Ordinary Lies.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy that?
Loved it. Yeah, it's nice to do a job where you can go, can I do that again? That's the best thing about telly acting. Can I do that? Can I have another go at that?
Is it going to be a second series?
I think so. I mean, I couldn't.
Your agent hasn't told you yet.
No, she's holding it off. It'll be August. No, it's. I mean, as far as I'm aware. Nobody said yes or no, by the way, so don't quote me on it. But as far as I'm aware, you know, the numbers were good. You know, it got 6 million viewers, I think. It got good reviews. And we're all contracted as well for a second series. So as far as I'm aware,
you'd
all
be
those
surprised
things, tick,
if it
tick,
didn't
tick,
happen.
Yeah, it would be crazy for it not to happen. I think it went down really well. And I had somebody in Glasgow the other day, this really old woman who... I've never had it before because I'm obviously on telly as myself. And it was the first time somebody... thought I was the guy
in real life.
Yeah, in the show. She said, "You're a bit mad, weren't you?" I was like, "It's not real."
Honestly, I'm really normal in real life. Jason, lovely to have you in.
Thanks, man.
And the producers, of course, continues at the Grand Opera House. Finishes on Saturday night?
Yeah, finish Saturday. We've got a matinee on Thursday, which could do with your help, so please come along. But the other ones are doing quite well, so try and have a little look at tickets.
Listen, come back and see us again soon.
Absolutely.
And for those of you who have been maybe following Jason on social media, he got sorted out with summer accommodation in Sunderland. So that's the good news.
All sorted.
Give him an old follow on Twitter there, he'll keep you entertained. That's it from me. Back again tomorrow. Stephen's having another day off. Shocking behaviour. The biggest show in the country.